The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
Welcome back to the Business Bunker Show here on 100.2 FM, Freeview 277 and online at bizradio.co.uk. You're listening to me, Paul Andrews, and the stonkily gorgeous Jill Serkin.
Hello.
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 You all right?
Yeah.
Cool. There's an event happening, and I can't say it because I don't know how to pronounce it. It's Carrara Foods and Bombay Cooks. That's our mate, Paul Babra.
Know that, yeah.
And it's to celebrate the Sikh New Year, and it's Happy Vaisakhi.
Vaisakhi. So it comes around the same time as Ramadan, then, must be, because Ramadan
starts. Well, it's a new year, so it comes around every year, doesn't it?
Yeah, but what I'm saying is it's near Pesach and near Ramadan.
No, it's in Canterbury.
Yeah, but it's near, it's very near to Pesach and Ramadan.
Okay, well, it's we're celebrating the Sikh New Year. Happy Vaisakhi. I really apologise if I've mispronounced that, which I obviously have. But it's happening on April the 14th, 6:45 p.m. until 10:15 at the Westgate Hall, Canterbury.
Well, there'll be very good food there, because Paul
is fabulous with his food.
We've partaken quite a lot.
We have. Yeah. There's a photograph of us floating around on the net somewhere of us eating the entire lot of food that he cooked.
Yeah, but we were a lot younger then.
I was a lot slimmer as well.
Yeah, but until after that meal.
Until after that meal. Anyway, you can find out about Paul's event by going to kentbusinessradio.co.uk/calendar.
Fabulous. I've kind of read all my emails, because I'm diligent like that. I've only got one more to read, but I will be looking at some Twitters. But I'm poised now to video Isabel while she's chatting, you see.
Okay.
So I can't look at my phone because it's all set up and poised. I'm poised. So you can read something.
We're going to talk to Isabel shortly.
Yeah.
Folkestone and Hythe District Council have introduced a green business grant scheme to help smaller businesses become more energy efficient.
Mm.
Grants of up to £10,000 may be available to your business, and in some exceptional circumstances, up to £25,000. The scheme will currently run until the 31st of March, 2024.
That's good.
Yeah.
Is it for? Solars? Heat pumps? What kind of thing?
To find out more, go to folkestone.works/greenbusinessgrantscheme.
And then I can find out, can I?
And there you can find out if it's for heat pumps, solar, windmills, insulation or anything else.
Yeah, or just a jumper.
Yep.
If Nurse Liz is listening, we can't even say jumper, because Americans don't know what jumper. They jumper, they think it's somebody that jumps off a building.
Right, okay.
You have to say cardigan or woolly, I suppose. I don't know what they call
woolly.
A woolen.
You want to know what the...
they don't do jumper.
You want to know what the American for a jumper is. It's a sweater.
Oh, yeah, sweater. Oh, yeah, you're clever. Could have been a woolly, though, couldn't it?
But no, it couldn't be a woolly. Can you imagine Americans saying woolly? It just doesn't work, does it?
No, it doesn't.
No,
it doesn't. Yeah. Kind of funny, though, isn't it?
Do you know what?
Should we speak to someone sensible?
I think it's really about...
It's more than time
that we spoke to someone sensible, because it's an absolute pleasure to welcome onto the Business Bunker Show for the very first time, Isabel Brett. Isabel, thank you so much for joining us. I am so sorry.
Yeah, about him.
I'm so sorry you had to suffer get to you.
Yeah. She's come all the way from Brentwood as well.
Well, yeah. Well, she lives in Brentwood, but her business is based in Dartford, is it not?
Yeah.
So why don't you kick off, Isabel, by telling us all about Brett's Business Services?
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you for having me, and thank you for making me feel so welcome and relaxing me down, because this is quite nerve-wracking.
Mm-hmm.
So Brett's Business Recovery, we're a boutique firm. That's code word for small.
Mm-hmm.
We're a firm of licensed insolvency practitioners, so we're dealing with individuals and companies that have financial difficulties.
Okay, and you deal with individuals as well?
Yes.
Okay. Does that tend to be business directors, or...?
Can be, not necessarily. So, they quite often, once a company gets itself into trouble, you'll find that the directors can possibly have given
Are also
guarantees.
In trouble.
So, yes, we can help them with possibly looking at what's called an individual voluntary arrangement, an IVA, which will help them avoid bankruptcy.
Right.
But we also deal with personal bankruptcy. So there's actually a rota system, so for the local courts, all the insolvency practitioners in the local area sit on a rota, and when somebody's made bankrupt, you kind of get offered out, and you can choose to accept the case.
That's interesting. So what does that involve? Is this with an individual bankruptcy?
Yep.
So what would your role be in that? What do you actually do with
it? With With personal bankruptcy, it is usually asset realisation. So right. usually, it, and sadly, there will be a home or a, you know, a freehold property involved.
So, let me try and understand this. Are you appointed by the court?
Yes.
Yeah. So basically, someone's gone to court and they've gone, got no money, gov, and they've gone, right, you're bankrupt. And then you have to go in and assess what assets they've got that they can pay off.
Yeah, but you were saying that it's sort of tendered out. So how do they choose? Who chooses?
The case will be offered to the next insolvency practitioner on the list. So the insolvency practitioner has the option to decline the job.
Right.
But if you do, you go to the bottom of the list and it'll probably be another year before you get
another
job.
You don't decline.
But usually they will, and this sounds horrible, but they usually will only pass jobs out that have assets in them. So the insolvency practitioner knows that their fees are going to get paid.
I was going to ask about that. So presumably you only get paid if there's some assets that you can take a percentage of.
Correct.
Do not necessarily you, but do any of the insolvency practitioners sometimes end up out of pocket?
Oh, definitely, absolutely, and we do. We, you know, sometimes take a bit of a chance, and sometimes things don't pan out as you would expect.
It's a bit like Storage Wars.
Yeah, we had a recent bankruptcy where, you know, actually started off pre-COVID, and there was a property involved, and we were sort of taking possession of the property, and then COVID hit, and then the courts shut down, and there's delays. Mm. And actually, by the time we come to sell the property, there's very little left there. The costs have gone sky high.
Right.
Yeah, so nobody wins.
Right.
It's a very traumatic experience for people to lose their business. We know that there are, you know, sadly, suicides and things, and marriage breakups, all sorts. So, do you get involved on the emotional? Do you get to hear the emotional side?
Absolutely. And, you know, actually, at the moment, we are very much being told that we must consider people and how vulnerable they might be, and, you know, treat them carefully.
Yeah, sure.
And, you know, if we spot those vulnerabilities, then, you know, we have to be careful. We still have to do our job.
Mm.
But we do need to.
Let me just make sure I've understood this as well. With the court-appointed things, is that individual bankruptcies or is it also company bankruptcies?
It can be company bankruptcies, but they're few and far between at the moment because it's usually the courts, the companies that are wound up through the courts tend to be, or historically it's actually been HMRC that did the winding up because it does cost money to wind up those companies.
Yeah.
And historically, it was HMRC that would submit the petitions to the court. But again, during COVID, they stopped.
Yeah.
They have started again. So there will be more coming through the court.
And has it got back up to speed?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm going to make an assumption here, and then you're going to put me right. I'm assuming that you don't get as many companies going through that process because the act of... of becoming insolvent as a business can be handled much better before you get to court.
Absolutely. So there are two routes to liquidation, shall we say. So usually it's what we call is a creditor's voluntary liquidation, which is where the directors effectively reach the decision themselves that the company can't avoid an insolvency process and will seek advice from us.
Right.
And we'll help them through the process. Although there are those that, you know, will stick their heads in the sand and wait for a winding up petition. And, you know, if that happens, then it's the official receiver that is initially appointed as liquidator. And then potentially it will come out to another insolvency practitioner on the rota. Right. But it's definitely a much, much better thing to do. I think if you recognise, you know, that your company's not going to survive, then work with an insolvency practitioner to help you through that process and see you out the other side. And,
absolutely.
And not get yourself into trouble.
There's a couple of kind of different ways I want to go here with asking you questions as well. Is there ever companies that wind up that are perfectly strong companies... but like the partners have fallen out and they just go, you know what, we're not going to do this anymore.
Definitely, yep. I'm not saying it's every day, but there are definitely definitely clients I've had where it's just been a partner, the shareholder fallout, and they can't resolve things, and actually the company just implodes, and all goes wrong. So
It's sad, isn't it?
But quite often, actually, that in those circumstances, because you do with a voluntary liquidation, you need a shareholder resolution, which is you need a 75% majority. So if you haven't got that majority, you're stuck.
You still can't. Okay. The other question I wanted to ask you about this is coming back to this. I can't remember what you called it, but a voluntary liquidation. Yeah, it strikes me that can also be used as a way of taking assets out of a business that you just don't want to do anymore.
Explain that, sorry.
Well, I'm just thinking, you know, if I came along and said, I'm fed up with this, so I'm fed up doing it, and I need to get my assets out of the business, can you wind it up for me?
Yeah, so it depends, if you're going through an insolvent liquidation, so, let's take a step
start
back.
From the beginning.
So there are, for insolvent companies, there are different procedures to go through. So if there's no avoiding, if there's no restructuring the company and turning the business around, then there are there's actually, COVID brought us a couple more processes, but they're quite rare. But primarily, you've got three insolvency processes for companies. You've got liquidation, you've got administration, and you've got what's called a company voluntary arrangement. So liquidation, whether it's compulsory, sort of winding up petition to the court, or a voluntary liquidation, that is more a process for the company to cease trading, sell off its assets, directors move on and, can start again if they want to, but they can just have a fresh start. Administration is more for if you've still got part of your business that is viable, that potentially could be rescued, then you can use what's called a pre-pack administration process to sell the business on as a going concern. So it's the business and its assets, but leaving behind the liabilities. So you sell the good bits,
right?
And you can sell back to the directors if you've done a proper marketing campaign and you're making sure you've got the best price.
Yeah.
So that's a really good process for saving jobs and saving the business. Or you have what's called a company voluntary arrangement, a CVA, which is like the company version of an IVA. So again, you've got a business there that's still sound. It's possibly just had some bad debt or just had a hiccup somewhere along the way. But if the directors are on board and have got the energy, if you like, and the desire, they can put a proposal to the company's creditors to pay them maybe 50p in the pound, 75p in the pound, 40p in the pound over a 5-year period, usually.
Right. So. And then presumably that enables the company to carry on trading.
Indeed.
So from my bare little brain approach to this, it's you can trade your way out of an insolvency situation.
Indeed, and it gives you, it's just a formalised time to pay arrangement. Whereas HMRC are very difficult to deal with if you go to them individually and say, can you give us time to pay back our debt? They're not very helpful. They were a little bit more helpful during COVID, so that was good. But unless you can really pay them back within 12 months maximum, they're not interested. Whereas with a CVA, it encompasses all of your unsecured creditors, and you usually can stretch it out over a 5-year period.
Right,
and you don't have to pay everyone back in full. It can be
pence
in the pound, provided the creditors
are. Just put me right here. In order to do that, in order to suggest a payment in the pound, the creditors have to unanimously agree, or is it?
Okay, no, it's all unsecured creditors. So you put the proposal to the vote, and from those creditors that come back and vote, you need 75% in value. Supporting the arrangement.
So if one creditor has the bulk of the debt,
they could
influence it themselves by going yes or no. Okay, cool. That's fascinating. There's some other stuff I want to ask you about here, but I also want to kind of change tack a little bit and ask you about your business journey.
Okay.
So tell us a little bit about Isabel and your background.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I wanted to be a PE teacher.
Go figure. So different.
But I ended up working in a sports centre, actually, which I really enjoyed, but I ended up doing more accounts and bookkeeping and that kind of stuff.
Right.
They went bust, actually. I got made redundant.
Did you help them?
I experienced it from the other side, so that was interesting. And from there, I actually went to work for, just happened to sign on at a recruitment agency, actually, and the lady that ran it, her husband, was in the office next door, and he was an accountant, an IFA, and an insolvency practitioner, and he was looking for a typist.
Right.
And I could type, and I think having done a bit of bookkeeping helped me, and got the job. I think actually the short skirt helped, but it was fascinating. So I just started off typing. It was audio typing. I was thinking, what does all this mean? And it was just really interesting. And my boss was very good and supporting me. You know, he supported me. I went back to do, I think at about the age of 26, I started doing evening classes to do my AAT qualification.
So what's it called? AAT?
Yeah, what Association of Accounting Technicians.
Wow, okay.
So it's just a basic level accountancy qualification.
But were you always good at maths at school?
Yeah, just like I'm a numbers person. I've learned in life that if I think you're a numbers or a words person.
And yet really, you were typing, so you were also wordy.
They weren't my words, they were other people's words.
But you presumably need to know how to spell.
Spell always helps, yeah. So,
you've not heard of a word processor, then?
Well, no, back in those days it was typed.
Yeah, but even now, we've had people doing, my husband's a journalist, we write a lot of, you know, very big white papers and things, and we've had people correcting his work, and he's like 30 years at Bloomberg, and a lot of our staff are, you know, Wall Street Journal and that. On some noddy platform where they've completely changed the whole meaning of the sentence. I can't remember what the platform was, but it was something that they think. And you know, my new husband's had to explain to them why they're wrong.
One of the things I love about your story, it is to me, it is the epitome of what I do a program in schools about careers, and one of the things I try to put across is that a career is a fluid thing, and people get obsessed with what do you want to do, a 17-year-old does. I'm 68, I haven't got a clue what I want to do. Why should a 17-year-old know? But the thing about it is that you started off being a PE teacher, got a job in a sports centre, you went bust, you become an qualified accounts technician and an insolvency practitioner. You would, wouldn't you?
My parents still kind of can't work it out quite. So,
but that, to me, that is, so many successful people have a similar pattern where they accidentally fall into something that suits them and then they grow from there. And I try to put that message across to young people that says, don't worry about it, just do anything and see what happens.
I think if you're prepared to work and work hard and... And it has been a lot of hard work.
Of course. Well, we got to the point in the story where you were doing your night...
Like 3 years.
Night classes, were doing your night classes for your AAT.
At the age of 26.
And that was the AAT.
The end of my then relationship because I wasn't home cooking the dinner and stuff. And then, so after getting my AAT qualifications, I then went on to... I got to the stage where I could have gone down the accountancy route, but really enjoyed doing the insolvency stuff that we were doing in the office.
Because you were working for...
So then went on to do my, what was called a CPI qualification, which was a Certificate of Proficiency in Insolvency, which is like your sort of first stepping stone to the insolvency.
You really got the bit between your teeth.
Yeah, and then another 3 years of studying for my JIEB qualification, which is the insolvency qualification. So...
What does that stand for?
Joint Insolvency Exam Board or something.
Okay.
It's a hard exam.
I can imagine.
But and most people come into insolvency with an accountancy background, but actually there's a lot of law involved in it. I'm better with numbers definitely than I am with words, but. It's fascinating some of the what we have to learn, and just, you know, the
there's so many things I could ask you, and we could tear off all over the place here, because I find it's fascinating. You know, it's for most of us, it's an arcane thing. You go, I'm an insolvency practitioner, and we get as far as you deal with people that have gone bust, and then that's it. Yeah. It's over our heads. So I'm fascinated by your story, and I'm fascinated by your journey, and I want to hear the rest of your journey. So you got yourself qualified as an insolvency practitioner while still working for this chap.
Indeed. A lot of years of singledom, but studying and working, and there was really not much time for anything else. But that was fine. Absolutely worth it. So eventually I qualified. I think that was 2000 and where are we? 8, something like that.
Right.
And still working for the same firm. My boss was then. He was also a bit of a property developer kind of person, and he'd just bought a building in Gravesend, right, which he was converting into offices and flats. And he said, "Oh, well, you might as well go and work in Gravesend and set up an office there and, you know, have a go," which was amazing for me to be able to just have that opportunity. Yeah. You know, ultimately, I didn't have any responsibility.
Well, he obviously noticed talent in you and knew that you could do it, which was great. And
it's weird because I actually spent all that time training and learning, and then actually the skills I needed at that point were actually going out networking and talking.
Yeah, completely different. Yeah, you had to do sales and business building.
Frightened the life out of me. I used to think, I've got to go and sit in front of these people and, you know, talk about economics and, you know, intelligent stuff. Actually, I soon learned, you know, football or golf usually worked.
And the short skirt you mentioned previously.
Let people know you're a human being. Yeah. And actually, you know, you're going to look after, you know, because usually most of our work comes to us through referrals from accountants, so it was accountants and other professional advisors that I was sort of schmoozing, shall we say. But obviously they want to know that their clients are going to be looked after, so if they refer someone on, you're going to have an honest conversation with them, tell them, you know, what they shouldn't be doing and all the pitfalls, and, you know, warn them, that's probably not quite the right word, but just, you know,
advise them.
Yeah, just, you know, if, you know, the things that could happen if you don't do things properly.
So what kind of things are you advising?
Well, before you get onto that, because that was the question I wanted to ask you.
We haven't finished the journey.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to ask you eventually, but I need you to finish the journey. So we got to Gravesend.
Yes, so I'm a manager.
And you're schmoozing.
Yes, and so, so started off, I think we had about 3 people in that office, and just, yeah, grew, managed to start getting
some referrals. Did you hire those 3 people? Yeah. Wow,
yeah.
Good.
Yeah, and grew the office and grew the reputation of the firm. Eventually, I think in 2010, my boss wanted to retire. So I came on as a partner,
right,
and ultimately bought him out.
Oh, wow,
so,
okay.
Yeah, I've gone from typist to owning the firm.
Fantastic. A fantastic story.
And kept your staff on, your 3?
Yes, yeah, and grown them, and we've probably got about 15 staff now.
Okay. Yeah. And you're based in...
We moved to Dartford. So in Graves, in 2016, our lease was expired in Gravesend, and I was looking for someone to buy it, and Dartford was the only place I could find anywhere. So, but that was good. Actually useful to me, because I live across the water, so it's a little bit closer for me. I don't have to travel quite so far.
Cool. Now, coming back to Jules's question, which she was in tune with me, is the same question I wanted to ask you, so I can ask you for both of us. I want to get a little feel, hypothetically, so you don't have to talk about real clients. When you are advising a business that is insolvent, what are the kind of activities that you get involved in?
Okay, so, you know, we'll, first of all, we'll always just try and... Every business is different.
Yeah.
So we will try and just understand the journey of the client as well, because that's important, and just to, you know, find out really if business can be turned around, you know. Right. Before we start talking about formal insolvency procedures, it's always, let's talk about other options and, you know, whether we can just go to creditors and actually negotiate.
Sorry to interrupt, but I'm just fascinated by this whole process. do you ever come across businesses where you think, hold on a minute, you shouldn't, you know, if you paid attention to this, you wouldn't be insolvent?
Yeah, I would say not as often as I would like. Right. By the time people do come to me,
it's too late. Yeah,
it tends to be.
Yeah.
And I feel it's a shame, because whether it's just, you know, because we're called insolvency practitioners, people think of us as, you know, the Grim Reaper and the last person they want to talk to.
Sure.
Whereas actually, if they came to us a lot sooner, then there would be more options available to them.
Yeah. And this is kind of why I'm asking you the question about what the processes are that you undergo, because I'm suspecting that what you're going to do is a lot of research and information shifting.
Yeah, so we do work with the directors, and I would just have a very open conversation with them, to ask them to tell me their story, what's brought them, you know, to where we are now. So just to understand, is it a one specific thing that's happened, and maybe a couple of things, and obviously just recently crisis on crisis that has happened, so nobody's surprised. But you know, it's always good to understand, actually, is this external forces, or is it bad management, or has the director just taken all the money out of the company,
or a pandemic?
It's funny you should say that, because in my own business we had a major problem just before Christmas where we got attacked in a fraud, and our bank account got emptied, and we had no cash flow. So you know, it's easy for a business to get destroyed just on something as simple as that.
I had one recently which is, I felt awful for them. We're a care provider, but for some reason their bank had frozen their bank account.
Right.
Just like that.
Right.
And that was it. That was all their funds tied up in that bank account. And they sent them under. And still to this day, the bank won't tell me why.
Yeah. Banks are really, really, really bad people to deal with these days. And this is my interpretation as someone that worked in the banking industry for 25 years at a very senior level. I have no trust of our banking system whatsoever, because you can't talk to anybody sensibly in it anymore. A friend of mine the other day, exactly that, suddenly he went to use his company bank account, no problem at all, they've frozen it. He rang them, why? We can't tell you.
Really?
What am I supposed to do? Oh, there's nothing. Well, how do I get my money? You can't.
That's terrible.
Yeah.
So sometimes it does suggest that there might be a suspicion of something.
Yeah. But they're so useless, the banks, that it could be anything. I forever tell the story about HSBC, the world's worst bank, who wouldn't deal with me because I didn't know my date of birth.
Okay.
You don't know your date of birth?
No. They would not deal. I rang them about a problem, and they said, we're going through some checks, what's your date of birth? So I told them, and they went, no, you're wrong.
So they had.
And from that moment on, they refused to speak to me because I didn't know my date of birth.
And my new husband went down to Whitstable High Street to get some money out, some cash out, and he waited at 9 a.m. to get the cash out, and they ushered him in at sort of 9:05. And he said, oh, hi, I've come to get some cash. And they said, oh, we don't dispense cash anymore. You've got to drive to Herne Bay or Canterbury. And of course, Canterbury are bringing in 15-minute cities now. So if he drives in, he'll probably get fined. Yes, and Maidstone.
So I want to come back to this issue, because I'm fascinated by it, about the kind of things that your work involves on a day-to-day basis when you're dissecting the entrails of a company.
Well, on a day-to-day basis, it's all, I tend to do the front-end stuff, the advisory stuff. So, you know, usually if there's a phone call from a potential new client, you kind of have to jump on it.
Yeah.
You can't say, oh, sorry, come back next week, because it can all be too late by then. So
right.
A lot of it's just front-end. Understanding the story, looking particularly, getting to the bottom of the financials, which is sometimes a problem, because some directors, bless them, you know, they're not finance people. They do what they do.
Making a huge assumption here, I'm assuming that quite a few companies that are in trouble, one of the reasons they're in trouble is they've got no handle on their finances in the first place.
Yeah, absolutely.
And,
you know, they'll have accountants, but they're normally the once-a-year accountants where they'll take their bag of records along and say, oh, you know, let me know how I've done in the last 12 months. Yeah. And, you know, so 6 months later, they'll know they didn't make a profit. And the problems, so the one, thing we'll always, you know, I'll always try to get to before anyone makes the decision. So the directors rarely, well, not so that's wrong. Quite a few directors don't understand with regards to dividends and how they're remunerated from a company. So, and it's quite usual with most directors that you'll have your basic PAYE salary, sort of about £12,000 a year, and then anything else is declared as a dividend. But dividends can only be declared if the profits are available or the reserves are available. And usually that's something the accountant will sort out at the year end after the event. So if you, you know, if you are unlucky enough to have to go through an insolvency process in, you know, before your year end, chances are you haven't made your profit. So actually the money you've drawn from the business is actually, it can't be classed as a dividend because that would be illegal. So effectively it will be classed as a director's loan.
Right.
And the directors will be duty bound to repay that money. So that, you know, it's always one of the first conversations I will have to say, you know, this, you need to be aware of it.
Yeah. Oh, director's loans, section 455s and all of that stuff is lovely stuff. Yeah. That's what you're saying in the nicest possible way is something that I've mentioned a few times in different contexts. There's a lot of small business company directors that don't really understand, one, the role of a company director, two, the liabilities of a company director, and three, can't work out the difference between getting paid and earning money in a business. You know, I've had arguments with people who would tell me, oh well, you know, I'm earning money doing this, so it's just my money. And you go, no, you have to declare it. Yeah.
Cash at bank doesn't necessarily mean it's profits.
Yeah, exactly.
We do. Can I just say, we also, because I don't want to talk doom and gloom all the time, we do also do what's called members voluntary liquidations,
right,
which are liquidations for companies that are solvent,
right,
and the shareholders want to possibly retire and extract their cash,
right,
at tax-efficient rates, because
right,
when a liquidator distributes cash from through a member's voluntary liquidation, the distribution is classed as a distribution of capital, so classed, taxed at capital gains tax rates.
Right, which is, what, 20...
19 or no, it's 20 or 28, but 24 distributions.
Right.
I think I'm not a tax advisor, so that's, I'll just caveat that. But also, sometimes when you're retiring, shareholders are also entitled to what was called entrepreneurs' relief. It's now called business asset disposal relief.
It's 10% relief.
Exactly. Yeah. So your tax rate could be 10%. So
right,
much better than drawing dividends or PAYE, much more tax efficient.
Okay. So
a positive note there.
Yes, thank you.
So, but it's like any service. It's like any accountancy or lawyer service. What Isabel does is very positive. She's actually helping you.
And truly, you know, a lot of clients do. You know, it's never going to be a good time for them, but we can help them through it. And even if you do liquidate a company, there's no automatic disqualification from you acting as a director of another company straight away. I do have to, as part of what I do have to carry out an investigation into the conduct of the director, just to see that they haven't done something that they shouldn't have done. And it's only really if there are some very naughty things there that potentially they could face disqualification proceedings.
Right.
So usually, you know, if you do put a company to bed, there's not much that, you know, you can start again.
Absolutely. Yeah. I just want to come back to this members voluntary liquidation thing. Can you do that under any circumstances? I mean, if you've got a fully functioning company and you just go, do you know what, I can't be bothered to sell it. I just want to wind it up and take the money out.
Absolutely.
Yeah? Okay. All right. Interesting. Do many people do that?
I think there's quite a few at the moment who are just trying, just want to grab their money while this.
While they still can, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah,
it is a sad indictment of the business landscape at the moment, thanks to our politicians, about how badly they're treating businesses and how. I mean, probably one of the final questions I need to ask you here is, you know, are you seeing an incremental rise in liquidations for whatever reason?
Absolutely. And when COVID first, you know, hit us, everyone in our industry was saying, oh, we're going to be busy, we're going to be busy. But actually, not. I didn't see any particular rise.
That's good.
Until this year.
Oh, this year.
Yeah, January.
So people have sort of staggered through, maybe with furlough help or whatever.
Well, that's the whole thing.
Yeah.
The whole lockdown thing destroyed businesses.
Yeah.
But they managed to bribe you to hang in there long enough for them to get away from it. And then, you know, it's the same with us. You know, all through COVID and lockdown, we were surviving. But as soon as that finished and all of the help went away, we were... Bang!
Do you remember the eat out to help out, which was absolutely bonkers? Yeah. You know, ridiculous. What was it? You could have a Scotch egg somewhere, and you couldn't.
Yeah,
you could, as long as you could sit outside and all this stuff. So hospitality, especially, is really struggling.
One of the things we repeatedly said about one of the things we repeatedly said about the government's approach to the pandemic and everything was that they were offering loans to keep people solvent. But they were then shutting their businesses down from trading. So you ended up in a position where you had a massive loan from the government, albeit that according to the government, you didn't have to pay interest on, but according to the banks that loaned it to you did, and eventually they bailed to the banks and you had to pay interest on it and you had to pay it back, but you didn't have a functioning business anymore because they'd stopped you trading.
Yeah.
So, you know, you were stuck in this position where you had no income and no trade or very little, but you'd run up massive debts, and that was always going to lead to further down the line to insolvencies.
I mean, I've noticed eating out, especially the portions have got smaller. So if you buy, you know, if you get fish, the price of fish, pieces of fish now in a restaurant are tiny. And also I had a fish pie in London with a chain, a good chain, and the fish pie has gone from that to tiny, tiny. And of course, if you're paying staff, I went to Oscar Bentley in Canterbury the other day, having paid, was it nearly £8 to park for the privilege of eating to support an independent restaurant. And they had three staff, so they had a chef and two ladies. And I was the only diner in there on a Thursday lunchtime. Mm. They can't, they cannot survive.
Yeah. Isabel, thank you for that.
She's got another story.
Have you?
She's got a how she met her man cold calling story.
Okay.
Yeah. Time for this?
Start from the beginning.
Go for it.
How did you meet your man? And his name's Craig, wasn't it?
Yeah, Craig.
So start from the beginning.
My lovely Craig. So he cold called me. So
about what?
He selling me his wares. No. So he provides offshoring solutions in South Africa. So for people struggling to find somebody in the UK. To
recruit,
and just if it's a desk-based job,
yeah,
then with today's remote working, there's no reason why you can't base that person abroad. And particularly, he's South African, trying to sell me his wares. So lucky for him, he got through, which I still can't work out how he even got through to me in the first place. But he comes from Durban. Where my sister, I've got a twin sister who lives in Durban as well, so I kind of gave him the time of day. And
it's lucky you didn't run off with your twin sister.
They have a very good standard of golf, both of them. My sister's a professional golfer and Craig's a very good golfer as well. So, actually, another story if we've got time for that. So our first Christmas together.
So hang on, how did you get to schmooze each other?
Yeah, so it was in lockdown, but we were allowed to play golf. So, we were out playing golf, and then he kept asking.
So, was that in South Africa?
In England.
So he spoke on a cold call.
But he lives in England now. So.
How did you get to fancying each other on a cold call?
We didn't. We just started playing golf. And I did start offshoring some of my positions. So, I've got four or five staff now out in South Africa who are fantastic, absolutely brilliant people. And that, you know, obviously better if we could find them in the UK, but honestly, I've just struggled to find the right people. So we started, he kept asking me to play golf, and I signed a contract, but then he kept asking me to play golf. I thought, okay, this is more than business now, so 2.5 years later.
Hole in one, Paul Andrews.
I've got one last question because that fascinates me about your offshoring.
Okay.
I don't want to drag this out, but I had a problem with this offshoring. I had a member of staff that moved abroad, and I got all kinds of grief over it. Do you have to have a South African company to do this?
You do.
Yeah. Okay, that was the problem I had. Somebody I employed moved to France, and the French authorities insisted I had to open a French company in order to pay them, which was driving me bonkers.
There's a lot of people that use Vietnamese, for example, remote workers, and Indian, of course.
Yeah.
Well,
so they don't...
There is a difference between outsourcing and offshoring as well. So outsourcing is more, you've got a piece of work and you just want it done by somebody.
Yeah.
But offshoring is very much, I've got a dedicated member of staff. So
they're employed. They're not freelance.
If you're freelance, you can do whatever you want. If you're on a PAYE or you're on a payroll, then you're an employee. Yeah. But there's a middle ground where you can have umbrella companies as well, which gets complicated. But yeah, okay, Isabel, it's been fascinating talking to you.
It's
such an interesting thing that you do.
I love it.
People need people. I know it's distressing under a lot of circumstances because your baby of a business is kind of slipping away from you. But, you know, having professional advisors to help you is the best possible thing you can do. So, Isabel, thank you so much for that. Just give us a shout out for your website so that if people want to find out how to get the money out of their business, they know where to come.
So it's brexvr.co.uk. So as in Brex Business Recovery. So brexvr.co.uk.
Fantastic. There's a link to that on the radio website, which will stay there forever. We've only got 10 minutes left of the show. So, Isabel, thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Do stay with us for the last 10 minutes of the show. You've got nothing to read, have you?
I've got one.
Oh, go on then.
Shall I do that?
Yeah, go on. No, don't.
All right, you do that.
I'm going to read one, and then you can read
I'll rest on my laurels.
No, you can read one after I've read one.
Thank you.
Yeah. I might even read two.
Go on then. Go wild, Paul Andrews.
Evening Standard SME Expo supporting the scale-up community. This is building on the success of its launch event. The Evening Standard's SME Expo is taking place on the 25th and 26th of April at the XL in London. Once again, it invites founders, entrepreneurs and business leaders to attend an action-filled two-day programme and exhibition connecting the scale-up community, which are a vital part of the UK economy. So that's April the 25th and the 26th at XL in London. Also, this is an interesting development. Canterbury Christchurch University, their mediation clinic helps support Kent business. The mediation clinic, run by Canterbury Christchurch University, has increased its offer to Kent businesses by appointing Jeremy Ferris to its panel of mediators. Jeremy is an accredited Centre for Effective Dispute Resolution mediator and a partner with Canterbury law firm Furley Page. His appointment takes the number of accredited civil and commercial mediators up to 9, as the clinic expects activity to increase as Kent businesses feel the pinch of the economy, as we've just been saying. The clinic, which has been operating since 2007, was the first of its kind based in a UK university. There you go.
Lovely. Are you reading another one?
I can if you want. I've got loads.
Well, I'll read mine, then I can just eat a biscuit.
Yeah, no, I don't want you finishing early.
Well, there's a free business workshop at Maidstone Innovation Centre. It's a series of business support workshops, and they're being held at the Maidstone Innovation Centre, which is MIC. The events are free to attend and offer delegates help in business, including aspects of developing and becoming commercially viable. The next free business workshop is called Getting Investment Ready Workshop. It's fully funded and is being held on the 22nd, 23rd of March. It's now open to more businesses so they can benefit from the free training and is aimed at those looking for investments into products and services. And it's delivered by NCL Technology Ventures, and it'll include an overview of the fundraising process, analysis of technology sales and marketing, financial planning and scalability, communication and identifying potential investors and pitching. So to find out more, their Twitter is at Maidstone Centre, and there's a little website which is www.maidstoneinnovationcentre.co.uk.
Fantastic. Thank you for that. if you run a business from based in the boroughs of Tunbridge Wells, Tunbridge and Morling, or Seven Oaks, come along to this event on the 22nd of March. That's tomorrow, manana, isn't
it? Yeah, manana.
Manana. At 9 a.m. at the Mercure Tunbridge Wells Hotel, that's in Pembury, and hear about the opportunities for business grants, CPD courses, and other business benefits. Yeah? You can book your place for tomorrow's event by going to eventbrite.co.uk/West Kent Business Support Event. There you go.
Super. Smashing.
You've given up work now, haven't you?
Well, I was just thinking, actually, how positive it is, because the clocks go forward soon, don't they?
Weekend after next?
Yeah, yeah, I can't wait for that.
Or is it this weekend?
Is it this weekend?
Yeah.
Ooh, we get an extra hour at your place.
We spring forward.
Of a Saturday.
Yeah.
Because I've noticed that it's now when we sit down to eat about 6 o'clock, it's still light. I don't have to light my candles and it's still light.
Yeah.
It's really nice. Positive. Yeah. Daffodils are out. Hyacinths are out. Snowdrops are out.
My fence is out.
Oh, was the gale?
Yeah, fence blew down.
I went in the garden. You know, I got all my washing dry because I talked about my pegs that day.
Yeah,
it was a Monday, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Southwesterly. And my gates that go onto Home Bay Road were absolutely... So I put two dustbins. I was very clever. I put two dustbins, wedged them. My new husband was most impressed at my forethinking.
And they stayed there, did they?
They did.
My dustbin ended up down the road.
Did it? Well, you don't put any rubbish in it. That's your trouble.
Yeah, yeah.
See, mine's always heavy.
No, the rubbish went everywhere.
Did it actually blow? Because all the bins on the seafront were all blown over.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. My neighbour's gate went there because she didn't put her dustbins wedged against it.
You should wedge your dustbins at all times.
It's the good one. So you've repaired your fence. Did Dan come and
No, I haven't finished repairing it, or Dan hasn't finished. He's done half of it.
Oh.
But of course, there's a gale warning for tonight, isn't there? So there's
another
no point
one.
Putting it back up today. Yeah.
Well, on Saturday, I can come and collect a few logs if you want.
There's loads of logs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are they seasoned?
Yeah. No, they've only just come down, haven't they?
They'll be green.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I can season them. I'll charge you for that, though.
you're like the guys
mark
I've
got, it up sell it on
the arborationists that I got to do my trees.
Oh, an arborologist.
Yeah, yeah. They said, would you like us to get rid of the logs for you? And I went, do you think I'm stupid?
Yeah.
No, just cut them up and leave them over there.
Yeah,
oh,
jewels.
We can dispose of them for you. Yeah, of course you can.
Yeah.
And it's same as a house I owned before, not this one, the one I had before. I had a really iffy roof.
Oh, it's a lovely house. I've seen pictures.
Yeah. I had to...
Shame about the iffy roof.
I had to replace all the lead flashing, right? It cost £100,000 to replace the lead flashing on the roof.
God.
It was a big roof, yeah? And the geezer that did it, he said, would you like me to dispose of the old lead?
I mean, let's try.
I said, you can sell it and I'll give you a percentage of what you get for it. Oh.
Were there no grants? Because it was listed, wasn't it?
No,
grants. Yeah, lead.
No. Anyway, why not join Sue and Deb, that's Sue Hainsby and Deborah Turner, and all the wonderful businesswomen of Kent on the 30th of March at the beautiful Bradbourne House, that's in East Morling, to celebrate International Women's Day, which was a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, but they're still celebrating.
They're still, you know what they're like,
yeah,
aren't you? It's like my Amanda, it's her birthday on Friday, she's already started on Monday, and she's going to carry on until the middle of June.
Next year.
Yeah.
That's the way to do it, isn't it, Isabel?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Isabel and I share almost a birthday. We're both Geminis. She's a day behind me.
Really?
I'm 26. She's 27 in May.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
She's much younger than you, though.
Yeah, she is.
No.
She is. There's a good bit to be a Gemini, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. But, double personality.
Yeah.
Bit two-faced.
He's a Leo. Yeah. Do you have a lot of Leos in your life?
No.
I know an awful lot of Leos. No. One, my best girlfriend is a Leo, Becca.
What month is that?
August.
Okay.
Nice. Yeah. It might be the end of July and August. I don't know. But I'm surrounded by Leos.
I seem to have a lot of Geminis, actually.
Mm. Yeah. I'm intrigued about your how you met your man. Is he your husband? Or
not yet.
Oh, but he will be. It's the plan, is it?
Oh, no. I'm saying nothing.
Yeah.
In case he's listening.
But does he live in England?
Yes.
Still? But he trots back to South Africa, does he?
Occasionally, not so.
And you don't go with him?
Well, I used to go myself because my sister was living there. But
yeah.
But she's just come back to the UK. But I'm sure we are due to go this Christmas, actually.
Mm.
Do some golfing.
Don't talk about Christmas. I've only just recovered from last one.
Social Enterprise Kent have got some workshops coming up. How to write the perfect grant application. It's taking place on in Margate on the 12th of April. And to book it and find out, it's sektraining.org.uk, how to write the perfect grant application. And then an introduction to GDPR, also in Margate on the 18th of April, sektraining.org.uk, an introduction to GDPR. And while I'm talking about you, you've got nothing to do, have you?
I'm watching you valiantly carrying on.
Listener, she's just sitting there grinning at me because she's got nothing to do.
I'm actually biting a nail.
Yeah.
Terrible, isn't it?
While I'm talking about training, there's some mental health first aid training. Ideal for anyone aged 18 or over who would like to gain the knowledge and skills to spot signs of people experiencing poor mental health. Be confident to start a conversation and signpost a person to the appropriate support. It's become a mental first aider, and it's being run by West Kent Mind, the charity for mental health. And the next course is on the 17th, 18th, 24th and 25th of May. It's 9:30 to 1:30, but it's online, delivered via Zoom, so you haven't got to go anywhere. And then there's a mental first aid refresher on Tuesday, the 25th of April, 9:30 to 1:30, also delivered via Zoom. If you want to get involved in that, westkentmind.org.uk, I want to learn. So westkentmind.org.uk/I want to learn is the place to go.
Very good.
To do that.
And remember, everything's on kentbusinessradio.co.uk. You can check it all out on there.
High 3 Network are offering a small business meetup, networking presentations, an intellectual property talk and workshop, and a studio tour taking place at Canterbury Christchurch University on Thursday the 20th of April at 10:30 a.m. So it's a networking event organised by High 3 Network, which is a creative network. You can find out all about it by going to kentbusinessradio.co.uk/calendar. That's it, I think.
Well, yes. It'll be time for Journey Home, I guess.
Think so.
Yeah.
Is that what you're doing?
And are you going back to Dartford?
Indeed. Yeah. Absolutely.
Good. Good. Well, the whole of Whitstable High Street is closed. And at the same time, they put... so you literally cannot... So what's that going to do to the businesses?
Who knows?
You cannot drive down Whitstable High Street.
Well, they don't want you to drive anywhere.
No.
That's why they've left all
the... one of the fishermen huts there.
Did
just
you?
Before Christmas.
They were, yeah, they? That was good. That owned by the Greens,
yeah.
Who own everything in Whitstable, including all the oysters.
That's why there's potholes in every road in the UK, because they don't want you to drive down them.
They're not filling them out. I was hearing on the news this morning the number of cars damaged by potholes is huge.
Yeah, yeah.
Well,
it's not surprising, is it?
No, especially in my little low car.
Anyway, we've reached the end of another show. Thank you for joining us on the Business Bunker
what
show.
What number show is it?
622.
There we are. That's how old we are,
yeah, yeah.
Isabel.
Yeah. I want to say a huge thank you to our two guests, Stephen York of the Academy of Real Assets, and to the lovely Isabel Brett of Brett's Business Recovery. To my stonkingly gorgeous co-host, Jill Serkin. We'll be back with another show next week. Have a great week, everybody, and we'll see you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye for now.